We're still in our study in Genesis, so if you want to jump over to Genesis chapter 30. We're looking at a situation where Jacob has two wives, and the two wives are causing a problem. And I thought about this last week, so bear with me. I forgot to mention there's one redeeming point of him having two wives that are sisters. He only has one mother-in-law. Okay, so we'll go on here with... sorry, just the thought just dawned on me that there is one redeeming point to heaven. All right? Sorry, you mother-in-laws. I know you. Be praying for me. Okay. In Genesis 30, then, as we get into this, the ladies, the sisters, are having a contest on trying to win their husband's honor, affection, and that because... in their culture, having children was considered such an extreme blessing that they wanted to have kids and to show their husband, hey, I'm bringing the kids for you, you know, so you should be honoring me and loving me. So there's this competition that's going, and it's even worse because these two ladies are sisters. So it's a real interfamily problem going on here. Now, it's said at the end of chapter 29 in verse 31 that when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, He opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So we'll see as we get into this a little bit more. The Lord was honoring Leah because she didn't have as much going for her as her sister. Remember, she was the one who was hoodwinked into the marriage and had that problem of her dad kind of shoving her into that. So I don't think she has a problem being married to Jacob other than she wished he loved her, you know. So there's a sad side to that too. Let's get into verse 1 then of chapter 30. It said, Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister, and she said to Jacob, Give me children, or else I die. Now the statement she has made to him is a very unjust statement. He can't give her kids, you know. Only God opens the womb and God closes the womb, and he's going to respond to that. He's going to tell her, you know, I'm not God. I can't do that. I just can't make you have a child. I mean, they obviously were trying to have children, but nothing was happening. So she speaks in this, I mean, very, I'm sure, passionate drama voice here of, give me children or else I'm going to die, you know. And notice what happens now in verse 2. It says, Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel. And this is what happens when an unjust pressure is put on a husband. And this is something for the ladies to hopefully grasp from this too. She's telling him to do something that he just can't do. It's beyond him. And that's very frustrating to the husband who wants to please his wife and make sure she's happy. And then when there's something that's put on him that he just can't do in his own power, his own strength, his reaction here, it isn't a great reaction. He's not a great example of this. But his anger was aroused, and he was really upset that she's telling him this. So his response then in verse 2 is, Am I in the place of God, who has withheld from you the fruit of your womb? Now, take a look for a minute back to Genesis chapter 25, because we'll see a better response on this. Genesis 25, if you remember, down in verse 21, this is Jacob's daddy Isaac. It says in... verse 21, back in Genesis 25 there. Now, Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. So Isaac takes the better approach in this, all right? His wife is barren, not having children, and he goes to the Lord, and he prays and asks the Lord, you know, to provide here, to bless his wife, to bring joy to her, and to bring children to him, which he was wanting too. But in this situation, back in Genesis 30... we've got Jacob who is angry, okay? His response wasn't one to prayer. He doesn't go to the Lord. He goes to his wife and tells her, I'm not God, okay? So they got into it at that point. Now, verse 3. But we're back in Genesis 30, verse 3. So she said, Here is my maid, Bilhah. Go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her. And in their culture, they would do this where they would give her handmaid over, and as the child was born, she would accept the child herself, the real wife would, and then she would say, this is a child God has blessed me with, and pull the child into the family and adopt the child, and it was theirs. So that's why she could say, have a child by her, and it'll be my child, and then, you know, I'll have brought you children. So in verse 4, and then she gave him Bilhah, her maid, his wife, and Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, God has judged my case, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son. Therefore she called his name Dan, and the name Dan means judged. And we see that these ladies are naming their children after their reaction to what's going on to their husband and their situation. And this is rough. I know where we're seeing what the Lord's shown us here is where the 12 tribes of Israel came from. So this is a very monumental thing in the history of mankind, okay? But the way it's coming about, there's a lot of flesh and a lot of man going on our side, you know? And this is probably the case in everything the Lord does in this world. Whenever we get involved with it as humans, we taint it, you know? God does things perfectly, but when we try to step in there and get involved in a situation, it's going to have the odor of flesh with it, okay? So we see this, and I just think what it must have been like for these guys as they're growing up and coming to the age of conscience where they're understanding things, and they start running with their buddies, and maybe one day their buddy stops and says, why was your name judged? Why did they call you that, you know? And they have to tell the story. Well, there was a fight going on at home between my mom and the other lady that's my dad's wife, you know, and oh, what a mess to have to get in and explain the whole thing. And the names get worse as it goes on. So verse 7, and Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, with great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed. So she called his name Naphtali, which means my wrestlings. Okay? Now, look at the conflict in the situation again here. She's talking about these great wrestlings that are going on, and it can be translated also wrestlings of God she's having with her sister. So there's this real frustration that's going on in the family, the pressure that's there. And one of the things the Lord shows us is, man really wasn't designed to have two wives. That doesn't work, you know. There's going to be problems. The Lord shows us in Scripture a lot of people that decided to have more than one wife at a time. And from that, there's nothing but problems that come, okay? So we see this, and the Lord keeps bringing us back to that issue of the sad problems going on in this family. Verse 9, when Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as wife. So this Jacob, he's having all these ladies shoved, you know, at him. Take this lady, have a kid with her, and he'll be my kid, and all this, you know. And then it says, and Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, a troop comes. So she named she called his name Gad, which means troop. And it's the idea that I've got a whole troop on my side now. It's kind of like it's really a war kind of a thing. War within the family, it's a war of jealousy, okay? Boy, the Lord, he doesn't hide stuff from us when people do things strange, does he? He puts it out there for us to look at. He's aware of what's going on. Verse 12, and Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. So she called his name Asher, which means happy. That's not a bad name to have going around. Everybody says, hey, happy, how you doing? You know, that's a good thing. Verse 14, now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest. So Reuben's probably 7 years old or somewhere around that age. It says in the days of wheat harvest, he went out and he found mandrakes in the field, and he brought them to his mother, Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. Now, the mandrakes in their culture, it was thought to help with fertility. And it wasn't something they ate, but it was the scent that it gave off. And there was this superstitious belief that if you had the mandrakes around, then it would increase your fertility, okay? Yeah, and don't look too hard at these people. We got a lot of strange things going on in our society, too, if we think if we do this, then this will happen, okay? So you do see some superstitious stuff going on here. So anyway, now Rachel's saying, please give me some. Because, see, Rachel wants more kids. So she's saying, if this will help me get fertile, then I want it, all right? Verse 15, but she said to her, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? So Leah is calling Jacob her husband, and I guess she's thinking, I had him first. You know, even though it was a bad deal, her dad shoved her into that situation. I had him first, and it says here, is it a small thing you've taken away my husband? Would you also take away my son's mandrakes? Now, by her saying, you've taken away my husband. It appears that Jacob was spending a lot more time with Rachel than he was with Leah. And that would make sense. I mean, he loved Rachel, right? He wanted to be married to Rachel. And he was, you know, in that love blindness, went to work 7 years for her to be his bride and everything. So now he has that situation. And this is something, too. With two wives, they're going to be favoring one over the other. That's just the way it's going to be. So Leah is still hurting over this. And she said, "You've taken him away." So it appears that she's really lonely at this point, thinking, "I hardly ever see my husband. You've got him all the time." Okay? So she's going to do a little bargaining here. She said, "Will you take away my son's mandrakes also?" And Rachel said, "Therefore he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes." So the two wives make a deal for a set of mandrakes, you know, that if you give me those, then I'll let him sleep with you tonight. Okay, you can have him in your place. So it's let's make a deal, and we got manipulation going on here still in the family. When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." How'd you like to hear that one? You know, "I paid for you tonight, so you're mine." Wow, what a messed up situation, okay? And it says he lay with her that night. So here we go. Everybody's wheeling and dealing, all right? They're all trying to get their way here. Verse 17, "And God listened to Leah." Now, this is interesting. Leah, to me, sounds like she's got a little bit more going spiritually for her. The Lord keeps coming up when it talks about Leah. So she's crying out to the Lord for this. I think she's humble, realizes, "I can't do anything without the Lord. I need the Lord's help on this." God listened to Leah, and she conceived, and she bore Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, "God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband." So she called his name Issachar, and his name means wages. Again, how'd you like to explain that one? Why did your mom name you wages? Well, she paid off the other lady, and that's, yeah, what a story. Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. So now Leah's been blessed by God to bring in six of the tribes of Israel. Okay, that's pretty awesome here. Leah said, "God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me." There's her heart still, that my husband will now want to be with me more. He's going to want to live with me rather than Rachel, because I have borne him six sons. So she called his name Zebulun, which means dwelling. Afterwards, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. And Dinah's name means justice or judgment. And she's going to come into the story later on, so at least we know where she came from. Verse 22, "Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb." Okay? Now, notice again, it gives us the emphasis that the Lord is the one who opens that womb. He's the one who blesses us with children. And we just have to praise him for children that come along. So he tells us here that he remembered Rachel and he listened to her. So I think Rachel was crying out to the Lord at this point too. Now it says, "And she conceived and she bore a son and she said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph, and she said, the Lord shall add to me another son." Now, the name Joseph means he will add. So she's pretty pumped at this point. She said, "I've got one son. I know God can give me another one if he gave me this one." So she puts that name right on the kid. Okay, Joseph is now called, his name means God will add another one. You know, it's another one coming. But notice what she said here, an interesting statement in verse 23. She conceived and she bore a son and said, "God has taken away my reproach." Now, God wasn't mad at her to begin with. Have you seen anywhere in this passage where it said the Lord was really disappointed with her, therefore he wasn't going to give her any kids? That's not on there anywhere. What we do see earlier is he said he saw Leah was unloved and he opened her womb. And I see that as the Lord kind of giving an edge to Leah. It's like Leah doesn't have a lot going for her. She was shoved in a marriage that it wasn't a love relationship to begin with. She's not as pretty as her sister Rachel. So the Lord steps in and grants her children, you know, right off the bat there. And I see the Lord is just blessing her. But what we learn from this is how Rachel's conceiving this. She's not thinking about God wanting to bless her sister. She's thinking, God isn't fair to me. Now think about that. There are times that you and I may not have things happen the way we think they should happen for us. We might think God isn't giving us the hand we deserve, or, you know, I've been following God a long time. Why isn't he doing this for me? Why isn't he taking care of this? Did we ever stop to think that maybe God's in the, he's blessing somebody else? And if he blessed us at the same time at their getting it, it would be a problem. It wouldn't help the other person as much, you know? I mean, you think about it from Leah's position, as low as she must have felt. Betrayed by her dad in a marriage where her husband didn't want her, didn't love her. And all of a sudden, you know, and she's not pretty as her sister, and she knows that. She's aware of that. And God starts blessing her with children. What an encouragement, you know, to think, wow, God does care. But if at the same time Rachel's having kids too, we're back to competitions. We're back to ground zero, you know. So the Lord's working things out in your life and in my life, and we can't second guess God. One of the things I want us to think about too, we're not good at judging God's motives. You know, I was going to ask you, does anybody here think you're really good at reading other people's motives? We think we're good at it, you know. But you find out, if you open your mouth enough to try that, that you're not very good at it. How good do you think we are at judging God's motives? We're lousy at it, you know. And this is just one place where she thinks, well, God was took away my reproach. He was the one that was upset with me. That's why I wasn't having children. Had nothing to do with that at all. She was totally wrong. God was blessing them. Okay, so just something to think about. You know, if you've had that thought that the Lord hasn't done what I think he should do, hang in there. God's in the business of blessing people. He's trying to help folks. You know, he's stepping in their lives and doing things in your life too, in mine. A lot of times we don't even pay attention to and don't even thank him for stuff that he's done. Okay, so she called his name Joseph, and she said, the Lord shall add to me another son. All right. Now, in this situation, again, God's been blessing both of them like crazy. They've got kids. That's what they wanted. They've got them. God provided them. And they don't even know how special these children are, that these are the heads of the tribes of Israel coming down the road. So they have been blessed by God over and over again. And something else for us to think about, you know, what has God done in your life and my life that maybe we haven't seen as a blessing? But if we could look down the road and see what God's doing with what he's already done in our life, we might just be totally blown away. So don't count any blessing too small that God has done. We don't know how far-reaching things might be. Okay? Verse 25, it says, it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go. For you know my service, which I have done for you. So what Jacob's saying here is, he completed his 14 years labor. Remember, 7 years for the first wife, 7 years for the second wife, and he's done. And he's keeping track. Joseph is a sharp guy. He's done with his job. He knows I fulfilled every single day. I worked hard every single day I was working, and I'm paid up. So I want to go now. Okay. So he says, send me away. Verse 27. And Laban said to him, please stay. Now, Laban is a very sharp businessman also, okay? And look what he says here. He says, if I have found favor in your eyes, please stay, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. So he's learned, after watching Jacob work, he knows you're a hard worker and you do a good job, but you've got an extra hand of favor on you. You have stuff happen for you that nobody else has like that. And I know it's God. It's your God that's doing that. And because you're working for me, I'm getting blessed. So he's smart enough to have figured that one out. All right. So it says in verse 28 said, then he said, name me your wages and I will give it. Now this is a great offer. Okay. Normally. This is a great offer for your boss to say, you know what? You've been doing such a good job, and the company is so blessed because you're here, that I'm going to let you name your wages. You tell me what you want for your wages. How'd you like to have that one put across the table to you? Okay? Yeah. The only trouble is, this is Uncle Laban that's making the offer. Okay? You better watch your back on this one. You better get it in writing. You better have your lawyer there and all this stuff, because this is Laban. All right? But he makes a great offer up front here. You just name your wages. I want you to stay. Okay? Verse 29. So Jacob said to him, you know how I have served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, and it has increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I also provide for my own house? So he's saying, look, I've done my job. I've paid for everything. I want to go now and start making things for myself. Because imagine this, for 14 years he's been working and he's not gotten a paycheck. Those 14 years have been for the wives. So he hasn't got anything for himself yet, all right? And that's what he's saying. I'm getting to the point where I need to have something to live on. So I've now paid my debt to you. I want to start earning money for my family, all right? Not a bad request at all. And he said, look, God's blessed you. You had a little bit when I came. Look how much God's blessed you. You got a lot now. So he said, let me go. Verse 31, so he said, this is Laban talking now. He said, what shall I give you? Now, he went from wages of you name your wage to I'll give you something if you'll stay. Okay, I'll just give it to you. No wages required. But Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me. Okay, so he's going to name what he wants as wages at this point. But he said, you won't give me anything. Jacob is a hard worker. He doesn't want anybody to take credit for his success. He's a hard worker on his own. Okay? We see a good character on him on this one. He's not out there begging. He's not going to take advantage of somebody else. He says, I'm going to work, and I want people to know God bless me, and I don't need you to help out on that one. Okay? So Jacob says, this is what I want you to do. If you do this one thing for me, so he's going to name his wages. I will again feed and keep your flocks. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages. So I said, look, you got a lot of flocks here. Some have solid color, some have the speckled. So they're the lesser ones, basically. Let me take the speckled, and I'll take that as my share. And I'll work for you to pay for them, but that's how I'll start out. Okay, start me with that. Okay? So he said, these shall be my wages. Verse 33. Then he said, so my righteousness will answer for me in time to come. When the subject of my wages comes before you, everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me. So I said, here's how you know that I'm doing you a fair deal. You can come and inspect my flocks after I get them started. And anything that's not speckled, if there are solid animals, they're solid color, then you know I've stolen them because I don't want anything but the speckled ones. Okay, so he makes it very clear that this is what he wants. Okay? And Laban said in verse 34, oh, that it were according to your word. He knows this deal is unbelievable. Okay? The solid color was the dominant gene. All right? So if you had an animal with solid color, you know that was more pure. That was a good deal. The speckled one, that was a weaker gene. It wasn't as good. So he knows that if Jacob takes all of the weaker ones, you know, genetically, then from that result, he's going to get a weaker flock and a smaller flock and everything else. So what has happened here is, this is amazing to watch with Jacob, he has really stacked the deck against himself. He is saying, I'll take the lesser animals, the ones that really aren't going to do much for you anyway, I will take them as my wages. And you can have all the good ones. So what are you saying? And old Laban seeing this is, whoa, that's a deal. You want to work for that? He's like, oh man, sure. And he doesn't even try to hide his expression of joy. He says, oh, that it were according to your word. Okay? But what's going on here? Jacob knows God's hand of blessing is on him. And he knows, even if I have the deck stacked against me, God's going to take care of me. Now there's a great lesson in this, okay? Think this one through with me. If we belong to the Lord, God's watching you. He's got his hand on you. You may say, why do I go through so many valleys? Because he's training you, okay? But there's so much God wants to do in our life and use us to minister to other people. He wants to work through us. And don't ever think that God is mad at you and that's why he's not taking care of you or something. Don't go there, all right? God is wanting to work. For anybody that's willing to say, Lord, use me, God is saying, I will do that. Okay, but a lot of times we have to go through a time of brokenness to get there. And that's the way it works. We're a better vessel once we're broken. Just like that horse that needs to be broken before you can ride it. Okay, so don't be discouraged if God takes you through those times. But Jacob knows I can have everything against me and I still got God on my side. I'm going to make it fine. Okay, so that's part of what you see in here. Now, Jacob's going to do a little scheming still. He has a hard time getting away from his character, you know, of trying to help things out, work things his way. But God's still going to help him. He's going to bless him and watch over him. So Laban's all excited about this. He thinks he's really got a slick deal going, and Joseph just doesn't know better. He's going to fall right into this again. Now, verse 35. So he removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted, all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, everyone that had some white in it, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and gave them into the hand of his sons. Then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Now, in case you didn't catch this, what happened here, Laban said, that's a deal, man. You can have all the spotted ones you can find today. And then he goes through and takes all the spotted ones out and gives them to his sons and says, I want you to go 3 days' journey away. So now there is nothing in the flock except for solid colored animals. Laban is as dirty as they come, okay? I will gladly give your wages. And then he goes and steals the wages right out from under him, okay? But you got to catch a couple things here. Excuse me. Laban thinks he's dealing with Jacob. He's not dealing with Jacob here. He's dealing with the God of Jacob. And he's not going to come out ahead. This is going to cause his downfall because of the foolishness of thinking he can come against a guy that he knows God's hand is on him, and I'm going to take advantage of this guy knowing that. That ain't going to happen. Okay? So God's going to intervene on that one. Interesting, too, he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. Now, would you think you'd really need to go 3 days away? But Laban's thinking of things, what he would do. He was thinking, if somebody stole my sheep, they better be 3 days away, or I'm going to go get them. I want to find them, you know. So he does this. It's a dirty move on his part, dirty as can be, okay? But look what Jacob does at the end of verse 36. It said, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. We don't hear any comment from Jacob. It's like, okay, I intentionally stacked the deck against me. You've added to that. You've even removed the deck from me, so I can't even see it. But he just goes about and he does his work. This is awesome to see. God is working in Jacob's life. He's been stepped on a few times already, and he just keeps going. He just keeps going, okay? I know you and I go through times where we feel like we've been stepped on. Just keep going. Don't stop. Just keep going. Because if you belong to the Lord, God is on your side. We don't have to worry when people play these games with us. Just keep going with the Lord. Now, verse 37. Now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar and of the almond and chestnut trees, peeled white strips in them, and exposed the white which was in the rods. Now he took these and made stripes coming down them, basically. So when you looked at the stick, it would be, you know, brown and then it'd have a white stripe or whatever colors they were. They'd have the stripe in between as he was peeling little pieces of the bark off there. Verse 38, and the rods which he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. So the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted. Now, later on, you've got to see something here in Genesis 31 and verse 9, if you want to jump ahead for a second. Jacob knows God's doing something here, okay? Because it says in verse 9 of chapter 31, so God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. He knows God is doing this. Okay, if he knows that only God opens the womb, he knows with these animals, God's only going to only be the one that can open a womb and bring out a speckled animal. Okay, so it doesn't tell us in the passage why he's doing this. In his understanding, if I make these striped things here, when they look at them while they're conceiving, they'll have striped and speckled animals. Okay, that's the thinking. Now, I assume that's some kind of, you know, tale that was going around there, because I don't see any reason for really doing that. Looking at different commentaries, some people think this may have done something. Power of suggestion, I don't know. I wouldn't give that much credit. What we do know happened is this. When these animals started having their baby animals, it was God that was bringing those animals out. And later on, God showed Jacob that. So in chapter 31, he explains that God is the one bringing the animals out. Was it supposed to happen this way? Scientifically, no. Okay, if you've got the colored and you're joining it with other colored like that, they would all come out for the most part that way. The chances of having a spotted or speckled one would be very, very, very slim. Okay, and yet God's blessing him abundantly. So again, when the stack is decked against you, don't feel bad because God's in control. He's in control of the whole thing. Don't be discouraged. Don't give up because God is the one making things happen. All right? Just trust him and hang in there. So it goes on in verse 40. Then Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the street, and all the brown in the flock of Laban. But he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flock. So he was keeping his animals separate as they were coming out spotted and speckled. And it came to pass, whenever the stronger livestock conceived, that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them in, so the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. So Jacob is using some real wisdom on this now. He is gathering the stronger ones together and bringing them into his flock, and they're spotted and speckled when they're born, so it's working for him. I mean, God's really working things out his way. And the ones that were feebler turned out being Laban's. So he's actually using some wisdom and taking the real healthy ones and having them reproduce with healthy ones. And in Laban's flock, he's not doing it bad. He's just letting them do their own thing. He's not working it, okay? He's doing some interesting farming here as he's working this out with the animals.